Story Chat with John Fornoff, the art and passion of storytelling. Here's your host, Brian Bullebush.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Story Chat. I am your host, Brian Bullebush, and with me here today is the illustrious John Fornoff. How are you doing today, John?
I'm feeling illustrious. Thank you.
How does one feel illustrious? Is it the glow I don't know, but on your skin today?
I feel it. It's like a goosebump. I've got it right there. Okay.
Well, it wasn't a lot of subtext involved with that.
But
I hear today we are talking about subtext. So tell us a little bit about subtext and why it's important for storytelling.
That is a wonderful question. But before we answer that, I want to talk to you, our person listening, watching, that kind of thing. I wanted to just ask you something. So this is my question to you, something to ask yourself. So we've been talking all this time about how we do this. How do we structure our story? How do we develop a great character? How do we do what we do as far as telling great stories? But I want to ask you a deeper question. We'll ask it that way. The deeper question is, what is your compelling must? Remember in story, you don't have a story unless your character has a compelling must. There's something they want to do more than anything else. They got to do it. It's like life and death, you know? They have to go after it. So what is your compelling must in writing? Why? In other words, we're doing the how. We've been talking about how. Why? Why are you writing? Why are you doing it? Because that will push you through any obstacle that you have. Your compelling must. You're the hero of this story of writing. So you got to have a compelling must. Why am I doing what I'm doing? It might be, I want to make a difference in the world. And we'll talk about that in a moment, toward the end, actually. Or maybe it's, I just feel like there's something creative in me that needs to come out. My friends have always told me I'm a great storyteller. I just want to explore this and just see what it's like. Great. Any one of those. But somewhere along the line, you got to grab that compelling must. I've got to do this. And that'll get you up in the morning. That'll get you writing at night. That'll get you going as far as your writing goes. So ask yourself, take some time to figure out why. And not just figure it out here, figure it out here. That's where your compelling must really comes from, is right here. It's not what you think about, it's what you feel. And you know, this is something I've got to do. I've got a great friend, Kathy Buchanan, and she says, I cannot not write, which is really bad grammar, but wonderful sentiment. And I love Kathy. We can let her slide on that one. But I cannot not write. And that's her compelling must. She's got to write. It's part of her life flow, you know, what she's got to do. That's something she was born to do. So find out your why. So that I'd really encourage you to find out that why. That's your compelling must that'll push you through any obstacle that comes your way. You've got things will distract you. You've got problems will hit you. Situations will hit you. And you got to have a compelling must to push through those obstacles to achieve what you really want to do, what you're called to do. And so that's my compelling charge for you is to find your compelling must. Why are you doing it? There we go.
Excellent. Excellent point. It's for me, something that I struggle with. Why am I doing this? It's all, as a former professor of mine would say, it's all about intentionality.
Mm-hmm.
Be intentional, yes, in everything you do, from your writing to your life.
I got to chime in. Exactly right. This actually spills over into your life. Is what is your compelling must in life? What do you, and this goes beyond writing, obviously, but it could obviously include writing. But what's your compelling, why are you getting up in the morning? Why are you doing what you're doing? Because you got to have that compelling must. What am I called to do? Why am I here on earth? And just take some time away and just explore that question. If you're a Christian, spend time with God. If you're not a Christian, just spend time thinking through, why am I here? What am I wired to do? And as you delve into that, you're going to find the truth of why you're here. And that's a compelling must, if there's anything.
That also, I feel, segues into subtext. Why a character's in a scene? Why are they doing what they're doing? So, starting out, with the rest of today's episode. Subtext, what can you tell me a little about that? For me as a writer, that's a scary word, because if I know if I don't have subtext in my scene, I'm doing my scene wrong, and the scene can't be about what the scene is about. All this stuff being thrown around, subtext to me is a relatively scary word.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to scare you. Right. No, I don't want you scared.
It's okay. It's okay.
Yes.
You're fine. But I am triggered. No, I'm just. I'm
all right. Okay, great. Now we're going to have an episode right here on Story Chat. It's really comes down to what's really going on in the story. And you know what? It's nothing to be scared of. It's something to think about. What's the story you really want to tell? So there's two stories you want to tell. And if you really dig deeply, you're going to get this right off. And it's nothing to be scared about. The first thing is, here's a story you want to tell on like just the outside of it. So you've got a character, they've got the compelling must, they've got to get this or life won't be the same. And they've got to go through this compelling, they've got to go through those obstacles to get to their objective. Do they get it or not? That's the climax. Okay, so all that goes, that's your outside story, right? The inside story is what's really going on in their heart. And as a writer, write from here. Don't write from here. Here's text, here's subtext.
Mm.
Okay, so when you write from your heart, that's a story you really want to tell. I don't want to just tell a story about a retired FBI agent that is called back into service when we find out his country is in trouble and he's got specific skills that nobody else on the planet does, and they're calling him back and he's 87 years old. And so there's a story right there, right? Okay, so that's like the, I just made that up, but that's an outer story. So
I'd
now,
watch that.
But what's going on at the heart level? At the heart level, let's find out what that story is really about. That's what compels you as a writer. So what would grab me about that story is, I want to talk to people and maybe myself. Some people think, well, some people might think when they get to retirement age, I'm just retired. I'm kind of moving on. I'm just kind of like, there's nothing left in life for me to do kind of thing. And then maybe he gets around younger people that are looking for mentors, and he puts together a team, you know, and whatever. But what's going on at the heart level? So he's got to overcome an obstacle here to get his objective. So that's your subtext. That's what's going. Here's the story. A retired FBI agent is tapped to take on the biggest enemy the United States has ever met. All right. There's the log line where here's your text. The subtext is, what's the story real about? It's a story about overcoming his own feeling of inadequacy. Even though he's the biggest he's the most skilled FBI agent there ever has been, that kind of stuff. He's got to do his own feeling of inadequacy. Maybe he had a failed marriage. Maybe his kids don't talk to him. Maybe he's got to deal with his own feelings. He's got to overcome that to save the world. So that's the juicy part. That's the story that really we want to tell. We want to tell this story. That'll be cool, but whoa, what's going on underneath the surface? That's the subtext. And you see what I'm doing? I'm doing like, here's text. Subtext is what's going on. What's really going on underneath the story?
Yeah, a car may look pretty, but if it doesn't have an engine to match it, it won't have a lot of substance.
Yes, exactly. It won't go anywhere. Your story will not go anywhere without the engine. That's your subtext. Yeah.
So, are there any rules, guidelines, mild suggestions to help along that rule.
Okay, as a writer, as a writing teacher, I'm going to mildly suggest you so many things. That sounds kind of boring, doesn't it? Let me make some mild suggestions to you while you yawn.
I don't know. I didn't want to be too. I didn't want to be too aggressive.
Okay,
heavy suggestions. Sorry, power hitting. Let's go.
I've got some PowerPoints for you. Okay, we're gonna drill them on home. Just my natural energy, and I don't apologize for it anymore. This is I'm stuck this way the rest of my life, guys. Just pedal to the metal. I'm going for it.
Let's go.
So let's. I think one way to talk about this is men and women, guys and girls. And this, we can learn a lot, guys. We can learn a lot from women. All right, the women, you can learn a lot from men, I think too. But,
sorry.
we're going to talk about what you guys.
We're a little biased on that one because obviously we're guys. So,
But well, there's I think we can learn more from women than, and here's why. Mm-hmm. Women now, there's a prevailing thought that men and women are exactly the same. There's no difference. It's like there's some obvious differences, okay? But also, but the way we're wired, the way our brain is wired, a guy's mind is more the text of life, right? And so, and this goes down to like this kind of texting, right? Guys text, women subtext. Let me explain
that. My high school experience confirms that.
Yes, there you go. Okay, so here's an example. You, Brian, and I, we're talking to each other, right? So let's say you'll text me. You'll say, mm-hmm. have a great day. No, you'll say, have a good day. Let's say, have a good day, period, right? And I'll say, thanks. I might even go THX or TY. And we're done. We have had our exchange. It's done. It's like right there. It's have a good day. He wished me a good day. I say thank you. End of conversation. For women, it's just the beginning. Because
you're making me nervous.
When we get when they get a text from a guy, let's say it's a guy and a girl, they're both single, okay? Or this happens with women. I'm gonna talk about married people too, but let's talk about singles, all right? So a woman gets a text like that, and immediately she goes into subtext mode. She's trying to find what's the meaning behind what I see. First of all, look at how long he took to respond to my last text. It's been 2 hours. Okay, so he's going to send a text to a girl, right? And he's going to like, he was been in a meeting, right? And he, or in a phone call, right? He just got off and he's, oh, she, okay. And I'll say, okay, have a good day. And then I'm done. And then you move on. So she's looking at that. Have a good day. Have a good day. He didn't, notice how long he took. There's subtext. Notice he didn't say have a great day. He said have a good day. Oh, okay. I see what he's doing. He's toying with me, okay? He's toying with my heart. How dare he wish me a good day? Why didn't he wish me a great day? What is with him? I can't believe he did that. Okay, so they'll do all that. Okay, I'm kind of exaggerating a little bit. There's something, they'll look at each word, what does it mean? And there's something powerful about how their mind is wired to figure out what does that mean? And then they'll try to figure out, okay, what does that mean? He likes me or he doesn't like me? You know, like the days he loves me, he doesn't love me. He loves me, he loves me not. He loves me not, you know? And the question is, does he love me or does he not? There's a tension there, you know? So women pick up on this naturally. Guys, as guy writers, as far as girl writers, guy writers, is pick up on this, learn from women. Okay, let me give you another example of this. And again, we're talking about text versus subtext. If you open up, if you could like have a little latch on a guy's brain and you open it up, if you look inside, there would be a waffle. All right. And the waffle is like compartments. All right. So you have like, it's divided like a Belgian waffle. All right. So you picture the Belgian waffle sitting in the guy's brain. It's a waffle up here. So there are compartments. You got the upper left quadrant, the lower right quadrant, the upper right quadrant, the lower left. It's quadrants. And we think like this, this very methodical. Also, we're very linear, like and very binary. Yes, no, 1, 0. Black, white, you know, we're just like, let's do this. Okay, goal, 1, 2, 3, done. And we're done. We're done, okay? You go to a shopping center, you conquer the shopping center. You don't talk to your friends and contemplate the meaning of frozen foods. You got a list. You're going to hunt, gather, hunt, conquer, come home. I win.
Very yes. primal, very caveman.
Yes, I've got the green beans, you know? So, all right, for a woman, if you open up their head, inside, you will see spaghetti. All right. Now, I got this from somebody else, just to let you know, waffle versus spaghetti. But this is really good stuff. So their brain is all interconnected. And actually, physically, there's something that happens around birth, just before birth. Like, guys are wired like women at the beginning. The brains are, and something happens. I'm not sure why God designed it this way, but all of a sudden, boop, it goes in half, where you have left brain, right brain. There's the waffle, okay? But women, they stay, the right and left brain connects. Left is more logical, that kind of thinking, logical thinking. Right is more creative, generally, okay? Their brains, everything's wired together. It all connects, all right? So men, it's a definite connection. So this all relates to subtext and text and subtext. So guys are more text. It's like, yes, no, that kind of thing. If our stories were just about text, they would be boring. And guess what? A lot of faith-based films are just text. It's all on the surface. And what you're doing is when you are just giving text, when you're just giving what's there rather than what's under the surface, how it's connected, how you feel, a lot of subtext is about this part, right? Text, subtext. When you're just writing this, you're not affecting this at all. You're missing it. So we need to learn something from women. We need to learn how to connect with the emotions. A story is a journey of emotions, not a journey of thought.
Huh.
Along the way, but it's emotions. I saw a light bulb going.
That's really good. A comparison that I've never heard before, but it rings completely true.
Good. And it's, well, thank you. So that's something just to keep in mind is as you're writing from here, not from here.
Sorry, I didn't mean to throw you off.
No.
It's good. Particularly
no,
hard.
Oh, that's good. No, please do. I like your response because it helps. Yeah, And I'm talking to humans, but it's hard to see you as a human. And so, Brian, you are our token human here. Thank you.
Hi.
Okay. And you're far from a token. You're my producer. So thank you. So there's text and subtext. Here's the thing. A lot of faith-based films, and they're getting better. They're getting better, okay? But a lot of them, wow, they just stay in that surfacey level. They're preaching. They're preaching, and they fail to connect. And people know that. Like people that from the secular world watching a faith-based movie, they'll know it's propaganda. It's Christian propaganda. It's like, why would you watch that? Because it's like, you know, if you want to get preached at, you go to church and there's a guy in a pulpit, right? All right. Movies make lousy pulpits. All right. And Ralph Winter says this. Ralph is a veteran filmmaker, did X-Men, Fantastic Four. Great guy. Love this guy. We have conversations now and then talking about stuff, working on a secret project together.
Ooh.
But Ralph says that movies are not so good about giving answers, but they're great about raising questions. And that's what subtext does. Subtext raises questions. If you do everything on the nose means you say exactly what you feel and there's nothing behind it. For instance, there's a movie, I will not refer to what the movie title is, but maybe you'll pick it up. In this movie, the lead guy is talking to the lead girl and he says, and I quote, this is a like multi-million dollar movie, right? Are you ready? Get ready for this. Get ready.
I'm not sure I'm ready.
You're about to be blown away by this dialogue.
Here. Brilliant dialogue.
Here it comes.
Shoot.
And I remember this. It's such a memorable scene. It just stuck here. He says, I love you. And she says, I love you too.
Gripping.
Really bad. That is awful. Okay. You never, ever write on the nose. You never say picture Darth Vader. Okay. Picture Darth Vader coming in. He's storming into the rebel spaceship and he comes in and he says, I'm angry. You don't do that. Okay. Yeah. Don't state the obvious. That's writing on the nose. Don't write on this. Don't write on the nose. Right from the heart. When you're right from your nose, it's messy. Okay. All right. I'm going too far with this metaphor. Just right from your heart. Okay. Just trust me on this.
Well, honestly, I think you brought up a really good Star Wars because as soon as you went to Vader, my brain went, I love you. I know.
yes.
From Empire Strikes Back.
Okay. I know. Okay. Well, I love you. I know. Now that was a twist.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
it was a twist.
That was a good subtext. It wasn't, I love you. I love you too. It was, I love you.
I know. Yeah.
Because it told you about the relationship. It told you so much more than just they like each other.
Exactly. And sometimes that's a great example. Another, that's a very funny one, by the way. Another good example is, another example would be, let's say you got something where he's trying to express his love. So instead of saying, I love you, you could say exactly the opposite. You could say, I hate it when you smile like that. I just hate it. So he goes, what? It just makes me maybe he's a strong guy. You know, it just makes me weak in the knees. I don't want to be weak in the knees. I just, you know, whatever. There's all kinds of stuff you can do like that. But here, when you're right on the nose, like, I love you too. I am angry. Okay. You know, okay. That would sap, that would just suck all the power out of that scene, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it? Right? Because you're stating the obvious. Of course we know he's angry.
It also makes your, it undermines your character as threatening because you look at him as almost as a simpleton.
It undermines everybody. It undermines your character, undermines your story. And you know what it really does? It undermines your audience. You're telling your audience, you know what, audience? First of all, you're insulting them or you're boring them. Okay, two no-nos when you're right. You don't insult your audience. You don't bore them, okay? Two big no-nos. Don't insult them. Don't bore them. But when you write text on the nose and there's nothing behind it here, you're just insulting them or boring them, and they're going to, like, turn you off or tune you out. So make sure that, we get in that subtext what's really going on.
For if anybody out there has seen, if I may put out an example, one of the finest examples that I've ever seen, and I don't know if you've seen this, is actually in Cobra Kai of subtext for all of you out there. Daniel's son is completely lost. He's not getting
any... By the way, I'm sorry to interrupt, but can we say that you work on the show? Can we say
I do.
Oh, that's so cool.
Right now. Yeah, that's...
Brian works on the show. That is so awesome. He's not speaking from here. He's seen it. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. I just wanted to brag on you.
I don't remember what season this is. I think it's season two. Daniel's son is walking on the beach. The context is he's not finding any students for his dojo, and he's walking along the beach and he sees this gentleman fishing. And this gentleman is this tan hat, looks just like Mr. Miyagi from the original Karate Kid. And all through the episode, Daniel's son is going, I miss Mr. Miyagi. I really wish I had his wisdom. And Danielson can't believe it. He's like, oh my gosh, it's Mr. Miyagi, but Mr. Miyagi's dead. So how is this possible? And he walks up to this guy, and the kind of guy kind of gives him this look with fishing pole in hand and says, can I help you? Oh, I'm sorry. You look like a friend of mine. And the man says, oh, okay. No, I get it. Your friend, he liked to fish? He's like, yeah, no, he loved him. He loved fishing, and he looks down at the bucket and says, I see you're not catching any. And the gentleman, I'm not going to get this exactly right, says, they'll come. If the bait is right, they'll come. And Daniel-san looks at him and says, you know, you're a lot more like my friend than I thought. They're talking about fishing.
Wow.
But yes. Daniel-san is trying to attract students to his dojo to contradict Cobra Kai and their philosophy. And the scene is brilliant because the scene's not about what the scene is about. They're talking about fishing, but the man is actually talking about to the audience, students will come if the bait is right. And it, to me, you need to see it. It's a brilliant scene. It's so good.
Wow.
And it hits you right here, especially in the context of the scene.
I love it. Well, I hope we're putting out good bait here for our students that are watching, you know.
I hope so too.
Just stuff that and I don't want to, you know, hook you guys, but just, that's a great illustration. It's not everything that's on the surface. And in life, you know, we judge people on the outside, their text, but we miss their subtext. We miss what they're about. We put labels on them. And that's the problem with stereotypes. So don't do stereotypes in your writing either. That's cliche writing. Like we talked about the nerdy accountant, or we talked about the, I don't know, the overbearing woman that gets on her little husband. You know, those stereotypes, it's just like... It's boring. We've seen it time and time. Give me a twist on those.
Well, here's a good question.
And also go past what you see. I'm sorry. Go past what you see. Don't just label people that way. There's something underneath. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Stereotypes to me are often attributed to the comedy genre of usually a stereotype is funny because they do this, this, and this. Now, there are some stereotypes, particularly in the past, using the black stereotype, the Mexican stereotype, those are obviously bad stereotypes that you want to avoid, but the nerdy accountant stereotype isn't exactly quote unquote hurtful to someone, and it is often used for comedic value. Like mm-hmm. Dwight from The Office is that exact stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
So that's breaking this rule. So how does that work out?
Even with comedy is all about surprise. So even the most brilliant, beautiful moments with a comedy is when somebody is this way and all of a sudden they act this way, totally different from what you expect. It might be logical, but it's surprising. And so that's what draws them out. So yeah, you're right. We can have some, with comedy, you have some more of those stereotypes, but even with the stereotypes, there's even with like sitcoms, which are kind of like more the shallow end of things. Usually even then they'll have moments. Like there'll be a moment with your comic character where they're all by themselves and you get to see what they're really like. And now sitcoms will do this. They'll have a moment of like, oh, so they have this persona, but really that's what they are like. And that's what makes a sitcom rich. That's what hooks you, you know, when you see those quiet moments, right?
So it's maybe along the lines of you're allowed to have a stereotype, but don't stop at the stereotype. Keep going.
Oh yeah, keep going. Go deeper. Give us a twist, or give us a depth. Give us something surprising. That's the thing with all kinds of storytelling characters. Give us something surprising, not illogical. It's got to be logical. Okay, it's got to make, you know, it's like, okay, I didn't see that coming, but yeah, that makes sense. It's got to make sense, but give us something surprising. A couple of things I'm going to bring up. Anything else I was going to bring up on something on a couple of things on two great storytellers here. One is, I'm not sure if he's a great storyteller, but St. Francis of Assisi, he had this great phrase. He says, preach the gospel at all times, and when necessary, use words. And that goes back to a great proverb for storytelling is show, don't tell. So you don't just put things out there. It's just like, okay, do this, don't do that kind of stuff. Show it through action. Show it through their character. And that's part of getting down to the subtext. So you might have an agenda to do this, okay? Throw the agenda away. Speak truth. Speak truth. Now for faith-based films, we don't need to do product placement for Jesus, all right? And it's something I call gratuitous Christianity. All right. Where it's like, oh, we got to get the Jesus part in there. It's like, oh, please don't do that. And oh, we got to put a salvation scene in there, you know, get them saved. We got to do that, you know, because we've got, usually this is what happens. We've got a Christian investor and they say, I won't support this movie unless there's a salvation scene in it. It's like, okay, you got to earn that moment, by the way. Don't just stick it in there. Don't just force it in there because you're cheating. You're not telling the truth. This is a journey people take to come to faith. Some are quicker than others, but it's never cheap. And tell the truth. Tell the truth. And even if it takes you places that are scary, look at the Bible. It took us some scary places. Look at David, our hero. We went some scary places with David and his journey. But the Bible is truth. It's like, tell the truth.
Some of the protagonists and some of the stories are, you got tax collectors, you've got prostitutes,
mm-hmm.
you've got pretty shady people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And but it tells the truth. Warts, some people say it's warts and all. You show what they're really like. And I think a lot of faith-based movies, we just try to, oh, we want to clean it up, make them role models. It's like, I see that. Okay, get that, role models, but we're not perfect. We mess up, you know. That's what makes the heroes of the Bible, the best-selling book of all time. It makes them relatable. By the way, I want to speak of this. This is really important too. Talk about text and subtext. All right. So I'm going to say something heretical. So be ready. Okay.
Oh, no. Everybody
put on your seatbelt. Oh no. He's going to say something heretical. Okay. You ready? Here it comes.
Oh boy.
Get ready. We'll get letters. I'm sure we're going to get letters. When Jesus told stories, not one of his stories mentions the word God. I'm not done being heretical. Hold on. Not one of his stories. He told like 37, 38, 39 parallels. Parables. I'm sorry. And I got to look up the number again, but it's in the high 30s. He told all these parables. He didn't go anywhere without telling a story. That should tell us something as storytellers. He didn't go anywhere, Matthew says, without telling a story. Something important there. Best storyteller ever was, right? So the thing about him, he never had, ready for the, here's the second heretical thought. Not one of his stories has a salvation scene.
Mm.
Oh, they would never get by today's faith-based criteria here. But they're all about salvation. They're all about truth, the way, the life. They're all about love. They're all about what the message of salvation is without closing the sale. And what time Jesus is telling his story, right? I think he's telling his story with the seeds, right? And planting the seeds in different soil, and it comes up like that. And then he's done. He's done telling his story. And it's a wonderful little story about, you know, what happens when the farmer, when you throw the seeds out and the birds pick it up. And then he's done for the day. He's walking up, and the disciples are like, aren't you going to tell us what that like means? And he kept saying this over and over again. He who has an ear, let him hear. If you're tuned in, you'll get the subtext. You'll get it. But if you're not tuned in, you'll just get a great story. So as writers, you don't have to hammer home the moral of the story. You don't have to say, call 1-800, ask Jesus now, you know, on the bottom of your screen. You don't need to do that. Tell the truth.
And the great part about that is that implies that he respected the intelligence of humanity.
Thank you. We don't as a lot of faith-based writers. Again, this is changing, thank God, literally. But we don't respect our audience. Respect the intelligence of the audience. Give them little clues. Give them little breadcrumbs. You know, give them little hints, little clues. That's part of the fun. It's part of the game. They get to like, oh, I know what he's. I think he's saying. Oh, yes. But if you just say it right up front, it's sort of like searching for a treasure, and you get on an island and you get there. And then let's say you've been searching your whole life for this treasure, right? And you get on this island, you're ready to explore it. And there's this old guy sitting there and he says, oh, it's right there. It's like, where's the story? I want to battle some, you know, some pirates. I want to like, you know, wrestle with an animal or two, or, you know, I want to go through something to get that treasure. It's a boring story. If you just give me, you know, give me some stuff there. So anyway, a thought. I want to leave you with something. And this is my challenge to you. And this is kind of really the heart of what Story Chat is about, is, and what I want to impart to you. I want to tell great stories. And I want to help you tell great stories. And together, you and I can change hearts and minds. And together, you and I can change the world. Let's do it.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Story Chat. If you want to hear more, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. If you have any questions for John or feedback on the show, please email us at storychatwithjohn@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.